call, America and US. And so I think that having the because we're so much about evidence and what's your, what's the proof that I'm really.
Hey, I'm Spike Priggin, host of the Bedazzled Radio Hour. Broadcast every week from 12:10 until 2 p.m. Wednesday afternoon, live from Spike's Record Rack, 400 Main Street in the village of Catskill. Every Wednesday, I play pop, rock, soul, country, blues, reggae, and other obscurities, and once in a while, a hit or two. Please check out the Bedazzled Radio Hour with Spike Priggin on WGXE 90.7 FM, ACRA, every Wednesday from 12:10 until 2.
You are invited to join me upon the Cypress Bough. Music from North Africa, West and Central Asia. First Monday of every month, 8 to 10 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM and WGXC.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Upstate Films, featuring first-run and repertory films at movie theaters located in Rhinebeck and Saugerties, as well as live music, filmmaker conversations, staged readings, community events, variety shows, magic, comedy, and more. The latest schedules, as well as upcoming pop-up events at the community theater in Catskill, can be found at upstatefilms.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Jenny Getty of Red Hook, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click Donate. Thank you for your support.
Info, music, signals, news, fun and frolic, and emergency instructions.
90.7 FM, WGXC.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC news update. Liz Montgomery reports in Porcupine Soup that the formerly trailless 17 mountain peaks in the Catskills now have informal trails, and the Department of Environmental Conservation said on October 5th it will spend $50,000 to, and I quote, promote responsible recreation and sustainable use of the formerly trailless peaks over 3,500 feet in the Catskills, end quote. The money will go to a visitor experience survey and educational signs on the informal trails. The visitor survey begins this weekend, and anyone can also fill out an online survey through November 11th on a link on the WGXC newsroom. Patricia R. Doxey reports in the Daily Freeman that New York's Office of Cannabis Management began accepting applications from anyone wanting to open a legal cannabis store on October 3rd through March 4th. Previously, New York only took applications from someone who has been convicted of a marijuana-related offense or someone whose parent, spouse, child, legal guardian, or dependent has been convicted of a marijuana-related offense in New York before March 31, 2021. New York has been criticized for a super slow rollout of legal cannabis stores, with only a handful open across the state more than 2 years after legalization and none locally. Tremaine Wright, chair of the New York State Cannabis Control Board, said the expansion, and I quote, marks a huge step forward in making our vision of an equitable and accessible New York cannabis market a reality, end quote. But because of the slow application process, those applying for stores now won't have them open for some time. The Cannabis Control Board has issued 463 conditional cannabis licenses so far, but only 19 retail dispensaries and 4 temporary delivery-only locations have been opened in the state, none closer than Albany. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. Lou Posnow reports in New York State of Politics that Governor Kathy Hochul on October 6th boasted about 13,300 new manufacturing jobs added in the state since 2021. Hochul said, and I quote, New York's manufacturing sector is in the midst of a major renaissance, and we've got the jobs, the businesses, and the investment to prove it, end quote. Nationally, the Labor Department reported on October 6th that the country added 336,000 jobs in September. Unemployment in the United States is near a 50-year low at 3.8%. Locally, the rate is lower in all the Hudson Valley counties. And you can read more about that story in New York State of Politics. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
For the Daily Yonder and Public News Service, this is the news from rural America. Rural communities are intrigued by promises from crypto mining companies to add jobs and help transform their economy. But to produce digital currency, crypto companies often buy up cheap rural land to build data centers that use huge amounts of electricity.
Why would it be a good idea to be offering it to a facility that's also going to come in and be a massive user of electricity that's going to put stress on the electric grid, which often leads to other costs?
Earth Justice lawyer Tom Samar argues the crypto industry has little day-to-day utility and is dominated by risky quick-buck plays. It's also largely unregulated, making its impacts hard to measure. He says Kentucky Power raised red flags recently when it said it wants to delay closing its antiquated Big Sandy plant, while also promising a new crypto miner millions in discounts.
That gas plant had been proposed to retire in 2031, and now Kentucky Power is proposing to extend the life of that gas plant by 10 years or more.
Last year, crypto used as much power as Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, and Rhode Island. A Daily Yonder analysis finds black people in the rural South live in less segregated neighborhoods than their urban counterparts. Olivia Weeks has more.
This research shows how the racial balance of a neighborhood compares to that of its county. Sarah Mawat is a data reporter with the Daily Yonder.
The segregation score essentially measures how spread out a population is over a given area. So in this case, I was measuring how spread out the black and white populations were in southern counties.
For southern rural neighborhoods, she found a bit over 40% of folks would have to move to make the ratio of black to white people equal that of the county. But for southern cities, Mawat says it's 55%.
So a county with a really diverse population doesn't necessarily have a good segregation score.
I'm Olivia Weeks.
Pretty or plain, invasive plants can wreak havoc, overwhelming local wildflowers and native grasses and upending ecosystems for wildlife. The National Park Service is fighting back in the northern Great Plains with plant restoration.
National parks are like our public land heritage, right? We want these to be the healthiest landscape that they can be, and native plants are a big part of that.
Laura Perkins leads the Native Plant Initiative at South Dakota State University. SDSU and the Park Service are focusing on seed harvesting and planting techniques. But Perkins says their collaboration can only do so much and calls for farmers and ranchers to join in.
Especially in the northern Great Plains, so much of our land is owned by private people. We don't have a whole lot of public land.
Homeowners can also do their part by including native wildflowers in yards and gardens. For the Daily Yonder and Public News Service, I'm Roz Brown. For more rural stories, visit dailyyonder.com.
This is not a test, Domestic Violence Awareness and Prevention Month. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. On the afternoon of October 4th, cell phones across the United States buzzed or beeped simultaneously, testing the National Emergency Alert System. Some news organizations preparing the public for the alert offered a warning. If you're a victim of domestic violence and have a hidden phone at home that your abuser is unaware of, silence it before the alert. It was chilling to hear the warning, to think how a simple test of emergency preparedness could actually deepen a real, ongoing emergency for some. Violence against women is a global blight. It transcends race, class, nationality, religious, and political affiliation. The term intimate partner violence is synonymous, but acknowledges that there are male and non-binary victims as well. Importantly, intimate partner violence is preventable. October is Domestic Violence Awareness and Prevention Month in the United States, a moment to educate and engage in collective action to eliminate this all-too-often hidden pandemic. Tracy McCorder's story painfully captures the devastating impact of domestic violence. She courageously recounted her ordeal in an award-winning essay on Truthout. In it, she describes the cascade of catastrophes that followed her victimization at the hands of her violent, estranged husband.
In March of 2020, I was living apart from my spouse.
Tracy recounted on the Democracy Now! NewsHour.
Because he had relapsed on alcohol and he would be violent. And when he was drinking, his violence would lead to attacks that included choking. As a nurse, I knew exactly how dangerous strangulation is to anyone, to a domestic violence victim. It is considered the most dangerous form of domestic violence.
Tracy's estranged husband repeatedly came to her door drunk, harassing her and her neighbors to the point where she risked eviction.
I felt desperate that if I was going to find a way to escape him for good, I needed to help him.
So on March 2nd, 2020, Tracy let her husband in despite his intoxication, not long after he was dead.
He started saying, "Give me money, give me money." And I was not going to give him money to help him keep drinking. He then proceeds to attack me, which included a choking episode, and it ended up that he came away with my purse. He was by the door. I was further inside of the apartment, and I wanted him to get out. I was so desperate for him to leave. He wouldn't leave. Neighbors heard me yelling at him to get out, not to take my purse. I grabbed a knife that was a long, serrated knife. It was a bread knife because I thought I would scare him out of my apartment. It had, in fact, worked before that I was able to scare him into leaving me alone. He approached me when he couldn't find my wallet in my purse, and I had the knife, and it started to scratch him, in fact. It didn't scare him, and that terrified me. He was getting more angry, and so I agreed to give him my wallet. When I put the knife away and looked for my wallet, it wasn't where I normally kept it, in my scrub pants, and I pleaded with him that I didn't know where it was. And he didn't believe me, and he was coming at me again. And I was terrified that he was going to now choke me to death. And I grabbed another knife out of my kitchen drawer. And as he was coming toward me, he stumbled. I don't know if it was because he was drunk or he stumbled on things that were on the floor. When he stumbled, he impaled himself on the knife that I was holding for my protection, because I had a right to defend myself. And that wound proved to be very grievous.
Tracy called 911 and did what nurses are trained to do, applied pressure to the wound.
The police came into my apartment and then EMS, and I was forced away from helping to save his life, put in handcuffs, and I watched the police try to perform CPR on my husband, not putting pressure on the wound, and was forced to watch them pump the blood out of his body even faster than it was already going, and they wouldn't listen to me when I was trying to tell them how to save his life.
Tracy McCarter was charged with second-degree murder and sent to New York City's notorious Rikers Island jail. Denied bail, she languished there for 7 months as the COVID-19 pandemic ravaged the jail. McCarter was eventually released with an ankle monitor. She'd been pursuing a master's degree at Columbia University. Columbia suspended her for, of all things, gender-based misconduct. She lost her job, couldn't find work, as she had to check the box on applications that she had a pending felony case. Spearheaded by the grassroots group Survived and Punished, a solidarity movement grew using the hashtag #IStandWithTracy. It was retweeted by several Manhattan District Attorney candidates, including Alvin Bragg, who won. Though it would take him a year in office, he finally dropped the charges against Tracy McCarter. In May, Tracy graduated from Columbia University with a master's degree in nursing. She walked across the stage, draped in a banner that read, "Columbia U failed to support this criminalized DV survivor. I graduated anyway," it said. She's resumed work as a nurse at Weill Cornell Medical Center. Tracy McCarter's is just one story. There are millions more. According to the CDC, almost half of women in the United States, about 60 million women, reported sexual violence, physical violence, and/or stalking victimization by an intimate partner at some point in their lifetime. The figure for male victims is around 7%. Seeking help when in an abusive relationship can be risky, but skilled people are available at the National Domestic Violence Hotline at thehotline.org by calling 1-800-799-SAFE. That's 1-800-799-7233, or texting the word START to 88788. Millions of people suffer violence at home. Too many don't survive it. It's past time to end the scourge of intimate partner violence. This is not a test. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
And now, here is your WGXC weekend weather forecast. The National Weather Service in Albany is forecasting showers and possibly a thunderstorm today, with a temperature high near 64 degrees and a southeast wind at 6 to 10 miles an hour, becoming north in the afternoon. Tonight, there will be showers likely mainly after 2 a.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 46 degrees and a northwest wind of around 14 miles per hour. On Sunday, there will be a slight chance of showers before 2 p.m. It will be mostly sunny with a temperature high near 58 degrees and a west wind at 10 to 14 miles per hour. And on Sunday night, it will be partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 42 degrees. And on Monday, Columbus Day, it will be partly sunny with a temperature high near 56 degrees. And on Monday night, a chance of showers after 2 a.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 42 degrees. And that is your weekend weather forecast from WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia County.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Nora E. Edelman of Athens, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click Donate. Thank you for your support.
WGXC has a new call-in number for anyone to leave a 3-minute message that we will play back on the air. Listeners can leave as many 3-minute audio letters to the editor at 518-212-7509 as they want, and WGXE will let your voice be heard on the local airwaves. The number again to call in and record a 3-minute message that will be played back on 90.7 FM is 518-212-7509.
WGXE believes in creative use of the airwaves. WGXE is a program division of the nonprofit arts organization Wave Farm, based in Accra, New York. We are the only station in the country to dedicate significant airtime to radio as an artistic medium. Tune in to transmission art and experimental sound programming overnight and on Saturdays, and hear artists from all over the world who sculpt and compose with the airwaves.
Wave Farm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Wave Farm and our radio station, WGXC, operate and broadcast. The Mohicans named themselves the people of the waters that are never still, following their arrival along the Mohicanittuck, the great ebb tide river also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For further information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit Mohican.com.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM, WGXC, hands-on, listener-supported radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
Next, we tune in the latest episode of the I Have Seen Niagara radio theater show from G. Lucas Crane and Rick Royer. The show airs Saturday mornings on the WGXC Morning Show between 9 and 10 a.m. and every early Wednesday night just after midnight.
Lost among the detritus of our details, we turn the jewel-hardened sputum of our Niagara and let it catch our light in its facets. We shall spend a special series of moments now perversely investigating the mystical, unspeakable, and unspoken layers evident in our textures, the tales within our tales, beyond language, beyond reason, beyond the Western Door.
Force field that is at the same time a psychic field. This is the physical contact of the axionic entity. The person is being immersed and engulfed into a wave of energy. The contact is felt like that of a beam of light projected suddenly on your face with your eyes closed, or the heaviness of the heat wave one experiences in the hottest days of summer, or the paralyzing sensation on entering a very cold, freezing, sub-zero temperature of the outdoors. Certain people describe it like a wind or water running upon skin. Others compare it to the sensation one experiences when holding a magnet in the vicinity of iron. That sensation is a physical attraction or pulling toward a certain direction. A magnet, in fact, attracts iron and certain other materials by virtue of surrounding fields of force produced by the motion of its atomic electrons and the alignment of its atoms.
She bursts into a weep. Her foot taps mechanically. The churning leg milks her grief into the unseen pseudo-alchemical chambers working below. Every drop of that grief is collected through a network of tubes, glass and copper channels, terminating in bubbling beakers and fat-bellied iron vessels. The sobs, the moment of release, moaning, wailing, and all that wafts in from those in mourning is pulled under the floorboards by hot vacuum, filling sorrow jars and tanks of longing. It's oozing through the clear glass, smoking back up in a miasma that helps the seer see, helps the mediums make out the shapes in the invisible, yielding air. Lilyville processed pain is the philosopher's stone of the mystics of this town. Shelley is 83 years old, yet still riding her bike through the streets every morning, dumping hot ash under the tombstones, washing the sacred stump, the look in her eyes alive, smelling of cardamom, too virile, ravishing, is Shelley, with skin so youthful, blessed by the tears of joy and agony, sucked out silently, and mixed with the elixirs that moisturizes her skin, softens her dough, she parties. God, the parties here in Lilyville. All night, hard and frisky. Mr. Long, psychic, never catches a cold, has a mood like a rainbow, and has helped people connect to those on the other side, while he himself will live the long life on this side, thanks to the captured grief sweat, boiled in flasks, prepped to be exchanged for the power to hear the dead crystal clear. The hazy sizzle of a ghost touch, quickly as a flash, might have said, "I wait for thee, my lovely sister." Or was it, "I'm watering my lovely toaster"? A transformation takes place. An excess of pathos in one end, and magic out the other. Into the blonde helmets goes the gravity. Mothers mourning their dead kids. Kids missing their dead folks. Lonely husbands and wives waiting for the message with open wounds crying out to suture themselves with the stitches of a sign, a door, an assurance that the dead are at peace and joyful. It has a smell, a weight, and even a taste. Such things as hot, fresh anguish and deep cup of regret. At an average reading, no less than a giant spirit can be contacted, given the right dose of trapped fumes rising up from the reservoir of countless tears, waxing the faces of the bereaved with lavender Vaseline, as if awaiting the pressing of a jelly death mask mold to be sold at a later point at the local ghost shop. Lilyville, neither sinister nor beneficent, neither scam nor bargain, a duty-free shop on the borders of life and death, in science and spirit is all. Come, bring your deepest feelings. They shall be cooked, smoked, and snorted through old seance cones for stronger cuticles and clairvoyant skills. Here's one now.
If someone should say that sense can rise from nonsense only through wand, the power wand, of change, wand, or through extrusion by saw, some saw, kind saw, of birth, saw, it will suffice to show and prove to him what, that birth what, must be what, preceded by coition, and that no see, change see, takes see, place see, without joint action. In the first
speak, piece,
no senses can exist in matter before we have a living creature, because, of course, its substance is dispersed in air, things born to the earth, and hasn't foregathered nor made those balanced things proper to life, that start sensation, guard all watchful, guardian of
the earth. Not quite. The moisture is the message.
Further, since pain occurs when in our parts and organs, atoms of matter are disturbed and shaken from location by some force, but pleasure results when they drop back in place, you'll see that atoms cannot be attacked by any pain, nor of themselves gain pleasure, since out of all the atoms, there are none whose movements could, by change, be rendered painful, or garner the fruits of sweet life-giving joy. Atoms must not then be endowed with sense.
Lilyville is not only known for their psychics, but they're also home of the world-famous Lilyville soft pretzels. Yes, this is the same Lilyville as the popular Lilyville soft pretzel chain, found in many rest stops along the East Coast. In 1989, Marion Winfield of Lilyville started selling her unique soft pretzels on a roadside along a busy section of Route 33, and her salty, buttery... And her salty
with a magnifying glass with a magnification of 4 diameters, only a contraction of the large intestine to be seen. The mouth made vessels were too small for the given magnification. After half an hour of preparation of the
in
insect,
1989, Marion Winfield
was about to serve. Lilyville
is not only known for their psychics, but they are also home of the world-famous Lilyville soft pretzels. Yes, this is the same Lilyville as the popular Lilyville soft pretzel chain found in many rest stops along the East Coast. In 1989, Marion Winfield of Lilyville,
the muscle of the flesh, the mission
of broken wholeness, the universe, the ancient, and the
Our quantum world is not reacting to itself, but closed, though in replica itself.
Which persons share the same experience, they are in the same layer or branch. Experiments also provided in abilities to make our branches. Our quantum world is constantly splitting into multiple copies of itself. The two persons share the same experience, they are in the same layer or branch. And this layer is also provided in abilities to make our branches. Our quantum world is constantly splitting into multiple copies of itself.
Higher beings are only too happy when you show yourself loving enough to rise. You will be given every help and chance when you ask for it, whether you ask by taking LSD or any other way, be it simple prayer or writing a letter to Santa Claus. You're never asked to torment or frustrate yourself. You don't have to prove anything. You can't prove anything. Your vibrations always speak truth. You can't lie about them. And it is easy to rise on the wings of love. No matter how convincing any perception of any level of reality, no matter how overwhelming, intricate, and complex, you are still seeing only a fragment within our true reality, being just us, unresisting, unattached, loving all.
As in the Egyptian rite, so that the vapor and burning smell of the sacred smoke left without troubling the temple. On the other side of the altar, I found this inscription, exquisitely carved in rough letters, reminding me of the altar found at Velisium near Tarentum. As I circled this earthy or subterranean place, I saw no other handiwork except seats joined to the walls and of the same material. After admiring all these things diligently, without measureless delight and singular devotion, I returned to the surface, where I wondered at the preservation of that splendid work, the Samaria. It confirmed my suspicion that the temple had had an open roof, because the ruins had piled up around it while leaving this part undamaged. Now I cast my eyes about and saw that one of the tribunes was almost intact. Struck by my feet followed my eyes, and I hastened the tomb. In its ceiling, an elaborate picture had been preserved, subtly executed with incredible skill and expertise in colored mosaics.
That you needed to make some changes. Is there love in your past?
Yes, I mean, my family, when I was a kid, always provided lots of love. I don't know, I tried Match.com, I tried Christian Singles, I tried Bumble. And it's just guy after guy. And, you know, it's like, I want love. I want a family. I want someone who will make me pancakes in the morning. Who will take me out. Take me out to a nice dinner.
I see a strong man. I see a very strong man. Near you. Near future. Soldier.
Soldier?
Yeah.
Someone that feels like someone just moved into my apartment. I mean, helped me carry my groceries the other day, and rough around the edges. And I did go for military then. Put myself out there. I gained a weight. My job has gotten busy, so I haven't been able to go to curves as often as I used to.
Get some nice makeup. Get some new, big, strong. Carrying boxes, carrying dorm fridges and things. Very strong.
Get a buzz cut.
Yeah.
I don't really feel a kind of presence around me. Like, benevolent presence.
Someone, there are lots of hands. Did you know someone who was passed who had lots of hands?
The present research was designed to ascertain what type of person commits suicide at Niagara Falls. Data were collected on suicides identified by the police on both sides of the falls from 1978 to 1988. During the 11-year period from 1978 to 1988, 60 suicides jumped from the American side and 81 jumped from the Canadian. This total of 141 suicides, an average of 12.8 each year, represents an increase over the average of 7.1 reported by Lester and Brockup for the period from 1958 to 1967. Of those whose sex was known, 59% were male and 41% female. Thus, the percentage of women is higher than it generally is for suicides in the United States, 24%, or Canada, 25%. The mean age of the women was 38 years old, and of the men, 39.5 years. The most popular points for entering the water, Prospect Point on the American side, and Table Rock on the Canadian, are the points where a typical visitor first encounters the water. The majority of the suicides occurred during the summer months, May to August, and during the day, from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. In other words, at times when most tourists are visiting the falls, an intervention by bystanders is most likely.
Begin taping today, I'd like to introduce you to Mr. Peter Jenks of the Federal Communications Commission. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Barris.
I don't know if any of you are aware of this, but it's a federal offense to make lascivious remarks on a television network broadcast. The penalty for this disgusting, un-American behavior 1 year in prison, or $10,000 fine, or both. Anyone making a sick, subversive remark tonight will be arrested immediately. I then will personally escort the offender to federal prison for booking under edict number 364 of the Broadcasting Act of 1963. And it's a long drive to that prison, baby. Just you and me. No witnesses.
Okay, have fun, everybody. All
right. Right now on the line, we have composer and Guggenheim fellow Ellen Fullman, who is going to talk about her upcoming installation and performance called Elemental View at MPEC in Troy on, what is it, October 23rd? Whoops. Can we hear you, Ellen?
Hello?
I see. Yeah, the volume was a little quiet. Now we hear you fine.
Okay.
It's October 23rd?
It's now. The show is Tuesday, October 24th, 8 o'clock. Mm-hmm.
And you're going to play your long-stringed instrument?
Yes.
Tell us what that is.
Well, I'm going to fill up the stage at MPEC with 136 strings. And I'm performing on this with two other musicians who are a duo called the Living Earth Show. They're based in San Francisco. Yeah. Any more questions?
So how many strings is it?
Well, it's 135.
And how long are those strings?
Well, it's like it's going the width of the stage at MPEC, which it's about 60 feet wide.
So does it the size of the instrument change depending on the size of the stage?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The changing the size of the instrument changes the tuning. I don't really change like the key that the piece is composed in, but longer lengths allow me to go down into a lower range. But unfortunately, with this instrument, to go down by one octave, you must double the length. Okay, get it?
There aren't too many stages that large, right?
Right.
So how does it work? Because the way I've been taught about music is the strings are made
just
to forget everything.
Okay.
Well,
I'm just kidding.
Strings, usually the length implies the tone, right?
Okay, you can explain it, yeah.
No, you try to tell me what, because I don't understand.
Okay, this is something that's going to be quirky and interesting for the engineers at RPI, because I'm working in what's called the transverse mode of vibration, which is usually, say engineering for a bridge or whatever, this transverse mode must be accounted for. But in music, I'm working in the longitudinal mode, okay? And musical instruments are all tuned and operate with the transverse mode. That means that when a bow is moving across the strings or the string is plucked, the waveform is moving, say, up and down. But in my case, it's moving, say, in and out. It's a compression wave along the length of the string, and I'm bowing the strings with my fingertips lengthwise and walking. So it does have kind of a bowed string sound, cello-like, and I'm also able to evoke, say, the kind of timbre of an accordion or harmonica, but that's just because there's a lot of overtones in the longitudinal mode. The tone production has very strong overtones or harmonics.
So you were correct about forgetting everything I knew.
Okay.
I've got so many questions. Did you invent this, or is it based on something else, or how did it begin?
Yeah, okay. I did invent it, and the inspiration was Alvin Lucier's Music on a Long Thin Wire. And Alvin was a professor at Wesleyan and a pioneer in the field that you might call sound art. He created sound installations. The Music on a Long Thin Wire was an installation. My piece operates on a totally different principle. I just, heard about this piece, and I thought, what might I do through manually manipulating a long string. What does it sound like? What can it do? So I happened to be living in a large industrial loft space in the Twin Cities, and I just strung up a string wall to wall and started working with it, and that's how it came about.
So you probably couldn't have even done this without a large loft space like that, right?
No, because, say, an instrument the size of a guitar would produce frequencies so high it would be ear-piercing.
And so does it have almost infinite amount of sounds? Because you can play one string of the 50 or so at one place and play it at another. I mean, it seems like there's just infinite possibilities.
Well, I do feel there's a sense of the infinite in the sound because each string produces very strong overtones. And then when you're playing multiple strings or in a chord, for example, those overtones combine and recombine into different harmonies as I walk along playing. So it's kind of like an unfolding of, you know, harmonic progression in a way it's very complex, you know, as an artist for me to predict, but I have internalized, you know, that kind of form. And then what I've done in my music is I have composed parts, more rhythmic percussive parts, that the duo, the Living Earth Show, is playing to accompany, to interact with that kind of unfolding of, you know, harmonics.
And are they playing the instrument too, or are they playing other instruments?
Okay. They are playing the instrument and other instruments. The instruments that they are accustomed to. Travis is a guitarist, and Andy is a percussionist. But what I've done is I've adapted a string instrument for Andy to play with hammers. It's called a santur. It's like a Persian hammer dulcimer, and that's been retuned into my system. And so he's working with his kind of percussion approach, but striking strings. But also they play my instrument with a tool that I designed called the box bow, which strikes groupings of strings tuned to chords in small strokes. So I'm working with rhythmic patterns that they are playing with these tools. And then there's a larger one that I made recently for this piece, which I call the Shoveler, which plays 9 strings at once. And that produces more of a, you know, it's just a denser harmony with every strike of the tool.
And how do you learn to play a chord on something like this? Is it just trial and error? Is it math, like measuring the distance? You know, there's not frets already, right?
Well, in a sense, I do have frets. I put numbers on the floor under my strings, and that helps me to internalize and remember, you know, timbral differences as I'm walking. You know, like, oh, I'm gonna aim for number 5, and I'm gonna turn around, or then I'm gonna stay at number 3 and play that hand over hand and repeat that kind of, gliss, harmonic gliss. So I'm playing, it's in a sense, it's tuned like a harp in that every string is tuned to a different pitch. So I'm playing it like a keyboard. You know, I have different hand positions for each chord that I play.
And is there a lot of running involved? Because
it could happen. that's running involves a technique that I call Zoom. Zoom. But what I do with that is I strike the string just very gently. It's a very airy sound. And most recently, I performed a duo with my partner, Teresa Wong, and she was playing electric guitar. And I performed with this technique, and we called it fog in a Chinese painting. It's like mist or fog. It's like this very you know, I don't know, airy sound.
All right, I'm playing a YouTube video of you performing at MOCAD, so listeners can have a little bit of a sense what the instrument sounds like.
Oh. Okay.
You spoke about the I saw some photos online. The box you were talking about is that like rectangular wood box that yes. the wires are attached to?
Okay. No, the box that the wires are attached to is the resonator. You know, you can think of that as like the body of the cello or the guitar. So there or the harp. It's the strings terminate into a horizontal bridge, much like a harp. Just they just go directly in and are held with a pin in the back, and then the strings are tensioned from wall to wall, actually, from that resonator box to the other side of the room.
And so what was the box that you were talking about that the duo is performing with, too?
Well, they hold a tool. It's it has a rosin coating, and it strikes the strings in patterns.
And this is my big non-musical question, but is the instrument dangerous? Has anyone gotten hurt?
Okay. Well, the wire is like very fragile. It's like, let's see, it's 13 thousandths of an inch. I mean, it's just very, very fine, like even finer than what would be on a guitar, much finer than piano wire. It's the gauge is considered in the zither wire range. And it's if it does break, which it does, mostly it would break when I am tuning, because I crank up tension and, you know, get the whole thing under tension. And it usually or almost never has broken when I'm performing. But if it does, if a string does break, it just drops down to the floor. So
it doesn't snap in a violent fashion.
Not really. No, it's very fragile wire.
Well, I was wondering more about less the instrument getting hurt and more like someone walking into the wire in a kind of dark stage with very thin wire that you can't, you know. Do you have that problem sometimes?
We try to avoid that problem. You can hardly see it if it's not lit. Yeah, so the lighting is a really wonderful effect, because there's just like lots of metallic lines, horizontal lines. So it's like a beautiful sheen.
And have you been to MPAC before?
No, I haven't. So I'm really looking forward to it.
It's a wonderful venue that is sort of an instrument itself. People like to go in and experiment with the place.
Yeah.
So you should have a fun time there.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that.
What's the most difficult?
I'm a nerd. If you hadn't guessed, I don't have an engineering background. I'm an artist, but I like engineering nerds. I like, you know.
I was going to ask you if you had an engineering background.
So I think I'm going to enjoy that.
I was going to ask you if you had an engineering background. It seems like you learned some along the way.
I had to, yeah. Yeah, because I discovered this fascinating thing, and then, you know, so I just needed to pick up various skills and, woodworking included.
And how long ago did you make this? This is your main instrument? This is the main thing that you do?
Yeah, it really is. Like, I started working on this in 1980, 81, you know, so it's been 40 years. So it's been my entire adult life. And, you know, along the way, it has continued to evolve. It's, you know, my interest has really been sustained all this time, because I focus on different aspects or different, you know, the work that I do changes along the way.
And this is a little like the world only has so many like really great theremin players. It seems maybe you're the only one that can play this instrument.
Well, I'm the only one, yeah, that plays with the kind of intention that I have, but I do have an apprentice. and he's based in Dallas, and I've worked with him to build his own resonator box, and he's just now gotten a lease on a large space and will, you know, begin his own work with this instrument.
So you're passing it along.
Well,